What am I doing? Oh, shoot. No. Cancel. Okay.
To our, welcome everybody to our December 15th DAC meeting to 2021, our last one of the year. Glad you're here with us. We will call the meeting to order and we'll start off with the interpretation in Zoom instructions.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Muy buenas tardes a todos. Welcome. Thank you for joining us this evening. Gracias por acompañarnos esta tarde. Bienvenidos. Antes de comenzar, voy a hacer un breve anuncio acerca de los servicios de interpretación para la junta de esta tarde. Before we begin, I'm going to make a brief announcement regarding the interpretation services for tonight's meeting. For this session, first I'm going to start it in Spanish. Para esta sesión utilizaremos servicios de interpretación. En un momento, si nos acompañan hoy por computadora, aparecerá un pequeño icono en forma de mundo en la parte de abajo de su pantalla. Si nos acompañan hoy por teléfono celular, por favor toquen los tres puntitos en su pantalla para la opción de More, M-O-R-E, More, o Más en español, y ahí verán ustedes las opciones de interpretación. Si necesitan servicios de interpretación, por favor seleccionen Spanish o Español en las opciones de idiomas y después escriban la palabra español dentro del chat. Nosotros comenzaremos a interpretar la junta en cuanto veamos su mensaje, la palabra español adentro del chat. Si solo desean escuchar a los intérpretes y no a los presentadores en inglés, también seleccionen Mute Original Audio para desactivar el audio de los presentadores. Gracias. For this session, we will be using interpretation services. In a moment, if you're joining us today on a computer, you're going to see a small world globe icon at the bottom of your screen. If you're joining us on a cell phone, please touch the three little dots on the screen for the More option, M-O-R-E, More, and there you're going to see the interpretation options. Everyone in today's meeting needs to select a language, whether you're joining us in English or Spanish, all staff, all parents, everyone needs to select a language. So if you're joining us in English, please select English so that you can hear when the interpreters interpret what other language participants share into English. Also, if you're joining us in English, make sure you do not select mute original audio or you will not be able to hear the presenters in the original English. Thank you. Muchas gracias. And now, Ms. Johnson, whenever you're ready to activate it, please. And make sure you select everyone in English, select English. Thank you so much. And Ms. Johnson or somebody, if you can give me a thumbs up when you can hear me in English. Perfect. Okay. Thank you so much. You may proceed. You may begin. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Rodolfo. For the Zoom primer, I don't know that we've done that in a while. Mary, was there anything we have for that? Okay. Okay. Just a reminder, please be sure to sign the roster. It's in the chat. We'll be posting that every so often to sign in so that we know we have a quorum. And if you have any questions, feel free to raise your hand or use the chat box. And if you have the option, feel free to add your school name to your display name if you know how to do that. And if you have that option, if you're using a phone, but if you have that, if you're using a PC, you might be able to do that. Great. Okay. So do we have any public comments? Clifford, is that you? You're waving, I think.
Yes, I don't see a raise hand thing. So sorry. Yeah, I think this is the only place on the agenda where I can mention this. In the Voice of San Diego, there was an article dated December 9th or December 10th about how over $4 million of Title I funds were left unspent last year. And according to the article, not that I believe everything I read in the media, but it says the unspent money is left to the discretion of the board and the superintendent. And then there's a sentence that says district officials decided to direct even more Title I money down to the most high need schools several years ago. And I guess maybe it's because I'm new to this DAC, I guess I'm wondering, what role does the DAC play in deciding where these excess monies go, or even indeed where the monies go in the first instance? I mean, do they have to go to Title I schools? Do they have to, can they go to any school? And by the way, I'm from the SSC from Grant Elementary, but I'm speaking on my own behalf, on behalf of Grant. I just don't understand the role of the DAC in these things.
A great question, Clifford. We're going to talk, we have on the agenda here, the Title I budget, and we're going to do some breakout sessions around that. So I think there'll be some work around that a little later.
But do we ever make any decisions?
Yes, we make decisions at our school sites regarding how our school sites will use Title I money. In terms of the district, the extra money goes into a general fund that's not spent, and the district identifies priorities in partnership and collaboration with the district committees and school sites. And I know Tom is here too, and he can also provide some extra commentary on that. But before you do, Tom, Gray, is your question related to the same thing? Okay, so Tom.
No, it's not.
Maybe you can add on to that, and then we'll move on to Gray.
Sure. First of all, Clifford, it is an awesome question. I'm glad that you asked it, because it shows that we're thinking about that role and how we can impact decisions that are made. So just so you know, school districts are required to consult with the DAC over the Title I money. Consult is a very important word, and even in our title, it's District Advisory Committee. So I don't mean to minimize the role by saying, oh, we're only advisory, we can't vote to spend money a certain way. It's really up to the school board to allocate those monies, but they do listen to us. And there has been many opportunities, I think even in Crystal's time involved in the executive board, where we've made recommendations and listened, they've appreciated our input, and they make those decisions. So we're required to consult with the what we would call new money. But and I also want to thank you for not believing everything you read in the media, because it would be wonderful if they got it 100% correct all the time. But no matter what the outlet, sometimes there seems to be some discrepancies. But that money is filtered back to schools. And so Crystal's right. We're going to talk a little bit how that happens. And I'll give you a very clear example. Let's say we give $2 million. Only 1.5 is spent. 500,000 then would get redistributed back to schools using a different formula. So I believe that the district wants input on all of those. And this body has given input even on the central office budget as recently as last year. And we're going to continue to listen to your input, because, again, although we don't make the last decision, our input to the board is very, very valued, and they do listen when they make those decisions.
Okay, great. Do you have a public comment item?
I also had kind of a question. I was looking over the bylaws because I mistakenly missed the election last time, or at last meeting. And I was wondering if we felt as though the bylaws were followed, because the bylaws said that the election should take place after the first meeting after the nominations were accepted.
Okay. Well, you can look into that. I'm making a note right now to look into that and get back to you on that. Okay. Additional public comment. Okay, well then we'll move into the board officer introductions and updates, following on Gray's comment and question. A new board was elected. We will look into that procedure piece. A new board was elected. Our new leadership team consists of myself as the chair. Cindy Davis is our first vice chair, and Michael Kozma is our second vice chair. And I wanted to give them an opportunity to introduce themselves and discuss, you know, what their ideas are about serving on the board and kind of where their goals and priorities are. Cindy.
Hi, everyone. I actually, like Gray, also had to missed the last meeting. So I'm glad that you bring up the question, and thank you for your votes despite my absence. That's always a fun one. This is my second year participating with the DAC, and before that, was 2 years with my SSC. And it's been, I really appreciated the leadership of Jeff and Crystal and our previous board and the meaningful content and the direct impact that our SSCs have on our schools and the way that participation in DAC informs and applies to that role at the site level. It feels like one of the, as someone who is basically a full-time volunteer, it feels like a committee that has the most significant tangible impact. And it's been just really important to me. And I appreciate that the board is so willing to have the ear, have their ear to this committee and the way that this committee is so open to all of the voices from the sites and can really push that up. I just think it's really empowering for school sites. And that was what inspired me to want to have further commitment with the DAC. And that's why I'm here. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. And did you say which school site you were from? I missed that. I was writing.
I did not. Okay. I am at Cadman Elementary, just a tiny little school in Claremont.
Great. Welcome. And Michael, our second vice chair.
Hi, my name is Michael Cosma. I'm a sophomore at University City High School. My interest in student input and education came after taking ethnic studies last year when I learned about Henrietta Lacks. I worked with Project Lead the Way recently to develop curriculum about her. And from there, I sort of learned about other ways to get involved in education. So joining my school's SSC and then the DAC has been one of those steps. So as I serve as the second chairsperson, my goal is to learn as much as possible about the district and relay that information back to students so they can also be engaged.
Great, thank you, Michael. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Crystal. I'm actually school site council representative for Marston Middle School, Claremont High School, and Holmes Elementary. Triple threat, I guess, at all levels. And I'll be the chair for the next year. We've hit the ground running as a leadership team already. We've met with district leadership to talk about some of the priorities coming up. And we have already begun our work with the committee subgroup, the working group for the hybrid meetings. Cindy and I are working on that and how to get a strategy in place. And when we have opportunities to engage other DAC members, we would absolutely love your help. Initially, we're thinking that we'll need some help in meeting with legislators to bring this to their attention, the need for this. So if you're interested in that, let us know. I myself, as the representative for the superintendent search committee for the DAC, as you all probably heard yesterday, the board selected the two finalists, and they are.
The meaning of this.
Whoops, I need to be on mute. There we go. Thank you. The two finalists will be in town. I think it's a Monday, January 10th, for some community interaction and forums. I highly encourage you to attend those as much as possible. They're in person, and I believe there will be an online version of that. There will be an opportunity to submit questions to the candidates. So please put that on your calendar. The 10th of January. And also we're reviving the Bring to Your SSC document, which is kind of a one-page document of all of the things that we are discussing at the SSC, or at the DAC meeting that you can then share with your SSC. And it's the highlights, different trainings that we have, different deadlines, different things to be thinking about, and just some tips for your SSCs, because you get all this really great information here while we're together. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I don't always remember it all. So it's a way to just keep track of all the helpful things that you can share with your SSC members. Michael.
I know Crystal mentioned it. Ms. Johnson, would you be able to email us the digital link to the forum on the 10th?
You know what? I'm going to put the superintendent search website in the chat. And I believe the information is up there. So let me put it in the chat and then folks can click on that and see. I think it should be on there. And if not, let me know and we can send a message. Great, okay. All right, so we have a lot of exciting things planned ahead and we're looking forward to sharing out each month what we're up to. So I'd like to introduce now Pamela King. She's going to provide a family engagement news update. Pamela.
Okay, thank you so very much. I need to share my screen. Give me one moment. Good. I have two screens open, so forgive me for looking to the left and looking to the right. Thank you for your patience. Okay, here I go. So, can you guys see the screen? Yes, perfect. Okay, my name is Pamela King. I am the program manager with the Family Engagement Department. Always a pleasure to come and give you some updates. I'll probably restate some of the updates that you just heard from Crystal, since I have those same updates. But just to give you a little bit about us with the family engagement, we truly believe that families and schools and communities members are valued and trusted partners, and we're real partners who share in the commitment to and the responsibility of educating our children. And we always come from an equity stance. So we're thinking of all stakeholders, anyone who plays a role in a child's life, with this statement that we have. Do they feel connected to the statement and just building that home-school relationship, and not just like developing that relationship, but really sustaining it? So that's our whole belief and vision that we work towards daily. And so just to give you a little updates here with the COVID vaccine website. And so now they have separately given it to you. This is the link to the website, but they're going to put it on all of every school's website. So their webpage. Now, when you click on it, you'll see the link that'll take you directly to the COVID-19 vaccine website. And it has the mandate, all the different information that is shared district-wide is on that webpage. So it'll be not only on a district webpage, you'll see it on your school site's webpage as well. And then here also, I'm going to share the link for the two finalists for the superintendent. So you'll get the links in one document, but here are the finalists that the board announced last night, Dr. Jackson and then Susan Enfield from Washington. You may have received information also regarding the redistricting update. So every decade after the national census, the district look at the sub-districts and they determine the population. And so then they may have to redo some redistricting because of the census report. So I'm going to provide you with a link that will give you information and give you a little more detail about it. This doesn't affect the attendance at school sites. It's just how they redistrict things. And this is the image. Once you get on the link, you'll be able to see that image as well. You may have received information from your child's school in regards to the COVID at home testing kits that are going to be sent out. Every school will receive it this week. So it's what they actually receive one kit for every student. And inside you have two tests to be used right before the students return on Monday, January 3rd to next year. One to be used 3 days before returning to school. And they have a date there, which is December 31st, and one to be used the morning they return to school. They have instructions available, but also if they need to call a toll-free number, it's there for families. This it's not required to use. However, they did receive, each school site will receive one kit for every student. And they hope the families will register the kits with the California Department Health Department. Also, they have here, and you may have heard already that the CourseVac San Diego Unified Vaccine Mandate in regards to having every student or the students mandated with the vaccine. The website that I have here is going to provide you with the mandate information as well as the vaccine clinics, the vaccine van, and their location. Even the frequently asked questions. So they have additional questions that have been posed. All of that is on the website as well. And then just so you, just to keep it on your scope, they have free testing every single day at the Ed Center. And so that's for staff and for students. And I passed by there today. The line is not long at all, but you can get that test right there at the Ed Center. And they also still are having testing at the school sites as well. So you can check the school's website on the link that I will provide to you. With the tech tips that's on our website, this is for November and December, wealth of information to engage you in with your child. And if you need more information about the learning platforms here, which are utilized for students within the school, you can click on here and they have tutorials and additional information for you there. We have some upcoming workshops. On Monday, we have one with the Win a Break Fund. We have it at 10 a.m., 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. as well. And encourage you to come with your students, with your child. We're gonna have some engaging activities for you to partake in, as well as share activities that you could do over the break here in San Diego and virtually. Then we have our Parents as Partners COVID-19 Vaccine Forum. It's gonna be in Spanish, but please know that we have interpretation services in English. So it'll be in Spanish, and that's going to be on January the 5th. We're gonna have a panel of students as well as experts speak about the vaccine. And we also are going to offer next month the math workshops on place value. We offer those at two times. And Project UGMA, we're gonna talk about the ADR, the Attorney Dispute Resolution. So we welcome you to come. Interpretation services are available at every event that we have, and it starts 15 minutes prior to the event. I have the link here to our calendar that has more information about it. And then as far as food services, Feeding San Diego still are offering holiday distributions, and they are having that five meals kit for youth under 18, but they also are having a free turkey distribution on December the 21st at the time that you see here. So I'll provide you with that link, but also on the link, all the distribution locations that they have throughout San Diego are on there as well. So you'll be able to partake in those at those sites also. And then they have a community event. They have a food drive and a toy drive. This is gonna be spectacular. Look at the age group, 0 to 13+. So on that particular day, which is Wednesday, December the 22nd, you drive up, you get not only a turkey with the fixings, but you get toys for your child. Here it says child must be present to receive gifts, but however many that you have present, they're gonna get a wonderful gift from this event. So I'll put the flyer on the link on the document as well. And then I just wanna end with this to remind ourselves, during this time can be very difficult. It's so stressful. You think about gifts, you're thinking about doing things for others, you're thinking about, sometimes we think about what we lack. We really need to focus on self-care and self-love. And so just remember to either write or say those affirmations to yourself. And I have a couple here. I am loved. I'm smart. I belong here. But just those great things that you need to hear. Sometimes you just need to say them to yourself. And so just remembering that you are loved. We care about you, but also to say those things to yourself. And have a wonderful holiday season. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Pamela. You are well loved here in our group too. So you know. question that came in the chat, is it possible to put that PowerPoint either in the chat or on the family engagement website? We'll also add it to, Shayna had a question. I think that's a great thing we can add to the share with your SSC, Shayna, but also Pamela, if you could put on the website, that'd be great.
It's going to be put on the website. Actually, tomorrow morning, you'll see it. I'll give it to our tech. And because if you of your comments, let me make sure it's on the website. But I'm going to share the links with you now, okay, on the document.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so let's see, Clifford. Don't have internet access. Okay, is there any other outreach? I believe some schools, and this actually could be a good practice, posting family engagement news. Well, not a lot of traffic on schools these days. Going out with the principals' messages, the phone calls and texts. Yeah, okay, there are texts and calls from family engagement. Thank you, Marcy. So yeah, there's other ways that parents and families could be communicated with, but those are something, those are things that we definitely want to be sure that we're reaching all families. So we'll put that on our list of things to be aware of. Great. Okay. Well, we don't. Yes, Pamela. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, Michael. It looked like Michael had his hand. I didn't know if he had a question.
Oh, yeah.
I did. I noticed several people asking in the chat about special needs and the vaccine mandate. So I was wondering if you could give some more specifications on that.
Honestly, I'll be honest with you, Michael. That's not my lens as to knowing exactly what the requirements are. However, I can reach out to my colleague and make sure that I give you accurate information. But I'm pretty sure, you know what I'll do while I'm on? I'll just check the district website. I'm pretty sure someone asked that question on the FAQ, and I can see if they ask it.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, and Pamela, if you find it, if you could put the link in the chat, then the folks can click on it too.
Yes.
Great. I don't think we have a quorum yet, so we'll move on to the next informational item regarding the COVID relief funds. So I'll turn it over to Tom.
Hi, Tom had to step out for just a moment. So Sharon is available to present her item.
Yes.
So give me a moment, and I am going to share my screen. Sharon unmutes, I guess. So
great.
Give me a moment.
Okay. So, I just got a message. We have a quorum. Okay, good.
Yay. Oh, so okay. Let's tell you what, let's do the agenda in minutes first then.
Yes. Okay. So I'd like to entertain a motion from the floor for the approval of tonight's agenda. You can type your name in the chat and your school. Who would like to make that motion?
Joyce Arona, Morris High School. I'd like to make the motion to approve the minutes.
Okay. And Monica, would you like to second? Okay, Monica seconds. Any discussion before we call for the vote, which is all the way already up? We'll call for the vote. There's a poll that you should have received a pop-up screen for. Either you approve the agenda, you do not approve the agenda, or you abstain. Okay, looks like we have mostly everybody. Okay, the agenda has been approved. The next item for voting and taking action would be the approval of the minutes from November 17th meeting. I'd like to entertain a motion from the floor to approve November 17th meeting minutes. Either verbally or in the chat.
This is Debbie Rayner from Schaumburg, and I make a motion that we approve the minutes.
Okay, great. And then I'll take Rich. He had second in the chat. Any discussion about the minutes or changes? I would like to offer an amendment to the minutes, an update. I would like to include Patrick Callahan and Allie Martinez as guests in that meeting discussing the new math approach. Any other discussion about the minutes? Okay, so we can either vote on the current motion, or we can make an amended motion to include those changes to the minutes. Who would like to make an amended motion?
Anna Casey from Dewey Elementary. I move to make an amended motion to accept those minutes with changes.
Okay. It looks like Alyssa, would you like to second? Second. Okay. So Alyssa second. Any discussion on the amended motion? Okay, let's take a vote on the amended motion. There's a poll in front of you. Yes, if you agree. No, if you don't. Abstention is totally fine. That just means you don't have enough information to make a decision, or you were not at that meeting to verify that those minutes were in fact correct. Okay. Five more seconds. Okay. Great. Okay. Looks like the amended motion passed. And then the person who made the first motion, I think it was Monica. Would you be willing to withdraw your motion because we approved them with the amendments? Oh, I can't hear you, Monica. Yes, withdraw. Okay, so the first motion, as stated, has been withdrawn by Monica, who made the motion in the first place. Okay, I believe I did that right, but you parliamentarian professionals, you let me know. I know just enough to be dangerous, but not enough to know all the little details. So please let me know. Okay, now I guess we can move on to Sharon. No, okay, now she stepped away. So Tom's back. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so we'll move to Tom now, who's going to provide us information about COVID relief funds as was requested from our body at the last meeting. So this is a follow-up with that. Tom.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Mary's going to share the screen here, and we're going to kind of go through some slides. Okay. She said it's almost there. Right? Sorry about that. There we go. Okay, so I basically entitled this the ESSER 3 update. It is for all the COVID funds, which as we start to dive in here, you'll see. But ESSER 3 is really what we're dealing with now, is as you see the timeline, kind of how we've gotten here and where we have to go from here with these dollars. So next slide. I always like to put in the budget timeline because those of you new to this process, as much as we would like for this to be a very exact science, because of the cycle that we go through the year, it never really is. What I mean by that is the governor has until June 15th to really get his budget passed, but we have certain requirements within the district to make decisions much, much before that, like in March. And so we receive updates on what the governor's budget is going to hopefully look like. And fingers crossed and knocking on wood, there hasn't many changes in the past couple of years, but the potential to change is always there. And so you can see that we're here at the end of December, and then he'll release his budget next month. School sites will do their SBBs, planning on what is going to be happening at their school site based on the governor's budget. Really. Then we'll start to notice any classified or certificated staff that unfortunately their positions would be let go because of any cuts or anything that we do. And then it goes through April, May, he gives another revise. And then again, the governor's budget isn't final until June 15th. So I always like to share that so that people understand. I think the finance team does a phenomenal job with all those unknown factors of planning a yearly budget. And that's important to understand as we lead into the next slide. So these are the COVID funds. And the way we've laid this out is by fiscal year, because many of them are over multiple years. And you can see that I've put federal funds in blue, and on my screen, it's kind of a mauve for state funds. And so we're gonna go through each of these, except for one, as we kind of go through, but you can see that we started to get money in mid-2019-20. We've spent a lot of those dollars on things that we're going to outline here in the next couple of slides. And then you can see where we are. We're about right in the middle of that graph. So I didn't want anybody to think, oh boy, they got a bunch of money, we got to spend it. It's kind of a rolling over time type of process. So Mary, if you'll click the next one, the ones that have the stars are the first that we're going to go over. So if you click it one more time, these are the learning loss and ESSER I funds, okay? So in the elementary and secondary, that's what ESSER stands for, School Emergency Relief. We received a little over $30 million. What we've spent those dollars on, $5 million was spent on COVID testing. You've heard in, I think it was Pam's report, was sharing about the COVID tests that are being sent home. I mean, we have to pay for those somehow, right? And it wasn't those dollars, but it's a later fund that we're coming up. As we continue testing, as we continue moving on, decisions are being made through those dollars, but we did spend $5 million for the COVID testing. And then custodial and tech support was another 5.2. We did need to bring on over formula teachers. There was no way that we could have continued at the current rate that we had. So we brought in additional teachers or teachers that perhaps wouldn't have been here under a normal year. We hired them to do online learning and different things like that. And then phase one expansion was another 9.1. So that should add up to be around $30 million is what that first fund was spent on. Then there's the CRF funds. And this is learning loss mitigation, and which was a $67 million. So again, online learning, $22 million was spent there. Health measures, testing, different PPE types of things, professional development for our teachers. As you remember, when this first started, it was a huge shift for much of our staff on teaching online versus traditional ways that maybe you and I, when we were in the classroom. And so a lot of professional development was going on. We did fund additional over formula teachers through that, and then food services to provide nutrition, things like that, to our students during that time. And then the state learning loss mitigation funds, which was $8 million, we spent that mostly on nursing and tutoring and community partnerships. So Mary, if you'll click the next, those were the ones that were starred. And then coming in towards the end of last year, we got some in-person instruction grants and expanded learning. So one more click. So the in-person instruction grants was $31 million. And these are state funds. So that first set that I went through were provided by the federal government. These are provided by the state. So again, more COVID testing, custodial hourly, additional teachers, a lot of the same things that you saw on the last list we'll be seeing here. Expanded learning opportunities was $77 million. This body, I know if you were on this BAC last year, you've got a, or at the beginning of this year, I think it was, got a run through of the summer school program and how our extended day opportunity, trying to the loss of learning that our students, my son included, suffered from not being in school all that time. Learning acceleration, extended day classes, multilingual tutoring programs, and summer bridging programs for the transition years. So students going from elementary to middle, middle to high, spent those dollars in some of those areas. Mary? This is a lot of information, but you should have a copy. I thought I saw somebody put the link in the chat, so you can go back. And as I always offer, if you see something here when you're reviewing it tomorrow night, next week, email me and we'll get you the answers. And then the last two there are the ESSER II and the ESSER III. Thank you again, Crystal, for putting that in there. So Mary, if you can click to the next. So these are dollars that we have until September of 23 and September of 24 to spend. And I'm going to kind of highlight and read some of this, but I thought it would be nice to interject this. I was on a meeting, in a meeting yesterday with our physical plant operations people, and they brought up a really good point. So when these dollars first started to roll out, we knew that we would have to have air fresheners, we'd have to have windows open, we'd have to provide a safe environment for our students. But nobody knew at the time how long that was going to go, right? So we made initial purchases as far as like separators and spacers and different things like that, the actual air filters that are in the classrooms. but it's starting to get a little bit cold lately, if you haven't noticed. And as we have classroom windows open to provide the cross ventilation, our kiddos are getting a little bit cold, right? So things that we didn't plan on, we're running more heat for longer than we normally would, because it's extending into these winter months again now. And so things that we didn't plan for at the beginning, because we had no way of knowing, a lot of these dollars are going to come up and start to fill those gaps for extended costs. I thought that was a really insightful comment. At least I got kind of got an aha when they said that. I guess I didn't think about that, but it's costing a lot more this year to keep our schools than it ever has, because the windows are all open, right? And so we're going to divert some of these funds towards those things. Anyway, the ESSER II was $132 million. Again, these are federal funds. The current planned expenditures, like I said, the air filters, IT support, the list goes on and on and on. I don't need to read them to you. And then ESSER III, which goes through September of 24, this is going to be based, these spendings around meaningful, there's going to be a lot of meaningful consultation to get input, and that process has already started. But it's really to support the whole child. So we're looking at more mental health, learning loss, different things like that. So Mary, if you'll click to the next slide. This is the overview that they're providing the school districts to address the impact on COVID-19 and lost instructional time. They are one-time funds for use, but in the school years, as shown on that grid from 2019 to 20, all the way up to September 2024. And then our district's going to receive about $302 million through ESSER III. Mary, if you can click to the next. This was a statement that the district is putting out. Again, I won't read it to you, but it is the pathway to recovery. And you can read it at the beginning, or at the bottom, as I've already shared. Investing in the whole child. So a lot of these plans and a lot of the feedback that we've gotten is to really look at the whole child in every area that we can. So we'll click it one more time, Mary. That means our LCAP is our guiding document. And so we wanted to provide for you the LCAP goals, and everything that we do around supporting the whole child should be through these lenses. Because if we didn't think it was important, we wouldn't have selected these as our LCAP goals, right? So we're trying to be as aligned as possible, Mary. And so the allocations are in three areas, and you can kind of see the amounts there. Safe in-person learning. So that would be $85 million. So that's going to continue to support our PPE, our air fresheners, our masks, our testing, different things like that. And then the smaller portion on the bottom, ensuring access to technology. We've purchased a lot of technology. It's amazing to me when you stand back and look at all of the support we've given across the district. But as you know, technology gets old and it breaks and so on and so forth. So again, another about $22 million to keep our technology up until September of 24, where it needs to be to support our students. And then the big chunk of money is the lost instructional time. So we have the literacy program. I think all of you have heard about that, accelerating our literacy skills in our students, looking at spending those dollars on different types of programs and supports, again, for the whole child, not only to keep them safe and to keep them connected, but obviously schools are there for students to learn. And so we want to support their learning through that $194 million. Mary, if you can click it, I think. This is a lot of the same information, so I'm not sure why it was a double slide in there, but if you click one more, I think it'll take us to questions. So I'm not sure how much time we have left, Crystal. Again, I know it was a lot of information, but dig back into the presentation, pull something out, get a hold of me, and we can either address it at the next meeting or I can email you back.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I would like to have a few minutes for any questions that are coming up for the body. Okay, some thanking for Tom. You know, and Tom, I really appreciate you being here. I know you're still recovering, so
thank you. You can probably hear it in my voice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had a quick question, and I was thinking as you were talking, Tom, you know, we see these big, huge numbers. We see this big pie chart, you know, $194.9 million. You know, it's so big we can't comprehend. Is there a way either somehow we could distribute it, you know, to the SSCs or somewhere where we can break down what each piece of that pie looks like, you know, of the 194 million? What is going to instruction? What is going to, you know, teacher time, you know, just to understand where all that's going?
Yeah, I want to say yes, but I haven't done that yet. So I think digging in, I'm not sure how hard it would be, but you know me, Crystal, I'm going to do my very best to try and provide it. So I will say yes, that we will look into it, and hopefully I can get back to you right away and get something on that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, everybody.
Okay, yeah. And if you have questions for Tom, he's really awesome at returning your emails. So Tom, maybe you can put your email in the chat for folks who want to reach out to you outside of tonight's meeting.
I will do that. Thank you.
Okay, good. All right. Oh, there is a question. Jana, is there a document that charts each COVID-related expenditure against specific outcomes? That's a great question, Jana. Tom, what do you think?
In all honesty, I don't. Oh, am I still muted? I got a muted sign, but it doesn't. You can hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay. Right. in all honesty, I haven't seen it, if it exists, but I know that we are being held accountable for these dollars. So we do have some reporting coming up, and I'm sure my team, along with the whole finance division, will have to look at some of those outcomes. So once that's available, I can share it with everyone. But in all honesty, I haven't looked at that yet. And I don't know if the learning, leadership and learning side of the house has looked at it yet or not, but I can check into that too.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
All right. Well, we'll move on now to Sharon Rubalcalva. Hopefully I said that correctly. Who's going to share with us the California Healthy Kids Survey. Sharon.
Hi. And Mary's going to do my slideshow for me because I get distracted when I try to do too many things at once. So hello, thank you for having me tonight. My name is Sharon Rubalcalva and I'm the program manager of counseling and guidance. So pretty much what that translates to is I'm the administrator who oversees the department. So we kind of guide how counseling and guidance goes. I'm not the supervisor of each site counselor, but we do look into the program. So I got the great news that I was the owner of Cal Schools about a month and a half ago. And so what we're looking to do is trying to implement different ideas and strategies of how to use the Cal Schools. And I'll explain to you in just a moment what it is. What you're seeing today is, or tonight, is very similar to what I've shared with so far the elementary school principals, as well as the middle school principals. I do have an appointment with the high school principals, but not until after winter break. So just to let you know, it's very similar information. So if you have a question for your principal, hopefully they'll be able to answer. And I will be able to answer some questions too, I hope. Okay, next slide. So I always said chicks, checks, like I had no idea. And so I was schooled basically that that is just one portion of what Cal Schools does. And we at San Diego Unified, we utilize all three surveys. So the CHICS or the CHECKS survey is just the California Healthy Kids Survey. That is the survey that we administer to our students. The California School Staff Survey is anybody who's employed at a school site, district-wide, we hope to get the answers of how they're feeling that we're doing at the school sites. And then I've said this in the past, and I don't know what I can do to change it, but it's the California School Parent. I hope it someday we can add guardian to that, but it's basically the survey with for the parents and guardians that is sent home. And we actually ask the input or the feelings of the parents of our school sites. Okay, next slide. Oh, not yet. That's it, I'm done. Thank you. Okay, so who takes the Cal School surveys? If you don't know, as I'm learning more and more, I'm from secondary, most of my time was spent at Mira Mesa High School. So I am learning the elementary middle life as well. So elementary is grade 5, unless you're part of the Point Loma cluster, then it's a grade 4. It's an online survey. This survey for the grade 5 and 4 needs active consent. And what that means is that a parent actually has to say, yes, please allow my student to take this anonymous survey, bottom line. Secondary, we do grades 7, 9, and 11, and that's online. This is an opt-out. So when the PK-12 enrollment card was filled out, there was a question, I believe it was question 24, but I'm not going to hold myself to that knowledge. But there was a, would you like to opt out of the Cal School survey? There was an opt-out option there. So those opt-outs have already been collected with the PK-12. Obviously, if a parent changes or a guardian changes their mind, there's a way that we can make that happen. But truly, it's an opt-out for grades 7, 9, and 11. And once again, that's an online option. Staff have an online option as well. They just take it, they get the address and they fill out the survey. Parents and guardians, what we're doing is we're doing online and or on paper. So I know many, many families prefer the paper option. Therefore, we want to accommodate parents and guardians in that way. We are also having it translated. It was formerly only Spanish, but we're gonna be doing English, Spanish, Tagalog, Vietnamese, as well as Somali. So we will have those translations from the company with these online or paper. Online has a whole bunch of different options of languages. So we are very good. So I'm sorry, I'll get distracted. So at the end, I'll answer the questions in the chat if that's okay, because I'll get really distracted. Regardless, we have different options. So for this is just giving you an idea of how many people and how long it took to take the survey. So for the, we hit about 50%. So I'm not gonna read it to you, but you see the elementary breakdown, the middle school breakdown, as well as the high school. And those average times are the very last numbers that you'll see in the column. That's pretty norm to what is being told it should take. So we're right in line with that. Our next slide, you'll see how many parents. And the hard part with this is that we can't tell necessarily what percentage of parents this is, because that would be a whole new different data dive that I do not have the ability to do. But you'll see that there were 14,000 responses and the duration was about 12 minutes. Now these are online duration times. Obviously the paper one, we wouldn't be able to capture that. The third slide you'll see here is the staff. So we had a good majority of our staff take the test or take the survey. Once again, I'm not privy to know the exact amount of staff that is employed, but you'll see that it only took them about 13 minutes. So it's not a huge ask for everybody to do. Okay, next slide. So some things to focus on from last year to this year. Last year, I was not in charge of the program, but I have learned from last year's survey some things to change. So we had about 50% of our students participate. Our hope is to get around 70%. We do receive funds from the California Department of Education for the TUPE grant, which is the Tobacco Use Prevention Education Program. That's for grades 6 through 12. So their hope is that we get about 70% of our students taking the survey. So that's our goal. Last year, we had a really late window, This year, we're going to follow up to where it used to be, which is between February and March. This is an ideal time for our schools to administer the survey, because it's not the end of the year. Plus there's time to get the data before school closes. And that's huge. And that's something that we're focusing on this year. We had to have schools ask last year about how are we doing? Did we hit our goal? Should we do more? And this year we're gonna kind of streamline the communication. And then also last year, the data was kind of just given. Well, this year, in speaking with the company, they're gonna actually give us detailed data topics. So for instance, I've asked the administrators to say, what do you want from this survey? What kind of data are you looking? What points are you looking? And the company is going to help the administrators do data dives, look at trends, look at district trends, look at state trends, to kind of make this a more useful tool for our principals and for our schools. Next slide. So the data review in years past has been a beautiful PDF. It is a beautiful PDF. It's a novel. So, you know, the unfortunate part of it is that a lot of people have not had the ability or time to sit down and really digest the information. So, next slide. We actually are able to, we got for our administrators a dashboard. And what this dashboard is able to do, it's just a screenshot right here, but what they're able to do is manipulate the data as needed. So for instance, if they're looking at a certain population, or if they're looking at certain questions, or if they want year to year to year trends, this dashboard is actually going to help guide in an easier, more concise fashion how administrators can look at the results. If you go to the next slide, there's actually a public dashboard as well. I don't think I linked this one, so I'm going to put it in the chat if I, yes. So that's the, that is the link to the public dashboard. So you can see where the elementary students and the secondary students fall. And you can look through district. Would you look school to school? No, unfortunately, that information is not going to be there. But you can see where San Diego Unified is in comparison to the other schools within the state. Okay, next slide. So if you really were into what questions were being asked last year, these are the different differences from last year's quiz or survey for to this year's survey. The good important part to know about this is that they keep it updated. It's not the same survey year to year to year to year. They actually try to make questions more relevant as well as updated. So this is just, there's a live link in here that you can actually, it's a PDF. It's self-explanatory, but if you had no idea of what was being asked in years past, it really is not going to be helpful. But if you did, this will be helpful for you. Next slide. We also have to make available the actual survey. So these are just for references. These aren't that print your copy and submit it for us. So if you the core is the one test that we have to for sure make sure that our students take. So you will see the different surveys. You will also notice that there's a Spanish version. So our students only have the English and the Spanish version, but they do have the ability to take the survey in Spanish. I know West Ed and the companies are working on more translations, but this is what we have at this point. Next slide. So the question that was asked of me was, how is this aligned with the LCAP? And so if you did your control F and looked within the LCAP, you will see that it's actually named here. So the Healthy Kids Survey is utilized in Goal 3. And basically what it is it's the school climate, the idea that students would be more open to learning if they feel more comfortable, engagement, how, and so the questions kind of align to where, what, we're looking for the LCAP. So that is exactly where it's aligned with the LCAP. There's some similarities with other areas with the LCAP, but this is specifically where the Healthy Kids Survey is named in the LCAP. And then some questions that I had ahead of time. Can a parent or guardian just take one survey? Well, if the student attends the same, if you have multiple students at one school, yes. And what you do is you assume in your mind the experience of the oldest student. But if there's multiple schools, the hope is that you would, but obviously this is voluntary, it's anonymous. So if it's too much for the parent, then obviously it's too much for the parent or guardian. So, but do know that if there is multiple students at the same school, just one survey is being asked. And then the question, another question that was asked was, can the surveys be started and then left to come back to finish? And the answer is no, unfortunately. Well, fortunately and unfortunately, it is an anonymous survey. Therefore, that there's no login or sign in with a specific number. So a student could not come back and start where they had left off. But you'll see in the averages of the time, it can be well completed within a time frame of one period if you're at a secondary, or a short period of time within the elementary. And I know that there were some questions in the chat. So, and then my next slide is just my contact info. So that's me. But if you're okay, I think I'll just go to the chat and yes. Answer some questions.
Please do.
Okay. Is the survey only for the parents of those grades or all parents? That is a very good question. We want to know all parents of the district. So just because the students are taking it in grades 5 or 4, Point Loma Cluster 7, 9, 11, we are very interested in getting the information of what is being shared by all grade levels, all parents, all guardians. So good question about how could the SSC use the CHICS results? The thing is that the SPSA, or the student plan for the school plan for student success, and I probably got that wrong, is built, that is the goals of the school. And the goals of the schools, you want to have some metrics to see if you're moving metrics with the interventions or whatever else you're choosing. A lot of schools choose to use the SPSA, which is run by SSC before completion, that this survey is being utilized as a school climate or English learner or whatever the case may be. This is a very evidence-based questions, state standard, so you can see where we are with the state, way to have data at your fingertips for your school site. So that's most likely how a school site's gonna be using the SPSA with the SSC. We have other departments that choose to use the Healthy Kids Survey, specifically the counseling department. We've asked the counseling department to work with their school site principals and administrators to build similar goals, because we asked the counseling department to build goals as well, or the counseling offices. So therefore, they're all aligned and working towards the same goal, therefore using the CHICS data or CHECS data to help build move those metrics. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Sharon. Yeah, any other questions? Right. I know that the survey can be overwhelming because there's a lot of questions in this thing, and it's just hard to look through. So it might be a good practice for SSCs to take little pieces at a time and just review the results and see how they align with your school's SPSA. I know that it can be a very cumbersome process, but there's some good information in here for the SSCs to use. And I almost think that there's an opportunity for it to be included in some of Goal 5. As well, Sharon, and the family and community engagement with highly regarded neighborhood schools, because some of those questions get to, you know, what's the communication like, what's the connectedness with families and the school site. So there might be an opportunity there to explore that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. All right. Well, Sharon, if you could also put your email in the chat for those who couldn't pull up the presentation, in case folks have questions, following questions for you. Okay, so now we're going to move on to our preliminary Title I ranking, and Tom's going to also provide a presentation for this. Tom.
Thank you. I don't have much of a presentation, but I do have the document. this actually circles back to Clifford's question at the beginning of the meeting tonight. And what we're doing is we're sharing this with you. Are you bringing it up? Thank you. We're sharing this with you. This evening, and you are the very first group in the district outside of finance to see this. The Board of Education hasn't even seen these numbers yet. Matter of fact, our superintendent is meeting with the board officers tomorrow, and they are going to review this. So to kind of make more clear one of Clifford's questions from the beginning, this is an opportunity for us to look at. First of all, I'm going to orientate you to the report, kind of walk you through it and tell you what it is. Give you a chance to ask questions, and then the board will look at this on January 11th. And then 2 weeks later on January 25th, they'll do a second read and they will approve this or a modified version. I can tell you that last year, the process was very abnormal. A lot of things were abnormal last year, if you think about it. But a lot of this data, or all of this data, is gathered through the collection of the LCFF forms. Hopefully parents at schools know what that means, have heard of the LCFF, hopefully you've filled in your forms and turned them in either online or paper. But the more that forms come in, the more we qualify, and then the more our district qualifies for the overall entitlement of Title I yearly, which is about $38 million for San Diego Unified. The school district has taken of that $38 million, $15,500,000 and distributed it out to schools in what we call a base Title I allocation. So any school that has students that qualify for free or reduced lunch or for, through poverty through the LCFF, if the school has 40% or more of those students, then they qualify as a Title I school. Schools that are 39% and below do not receive Title I dollars. So those are, that's federal legislation. Our school district has policies and procedures that they've adopted, which I'm going to go into here in just a moment, to kind of share with you how we allocate that 15.5. Now, we're not talking about it tonight, but there's also a supplemental allocation. So those dollars that, Clifford, I'm sorry to keep bringing you up, but you asked a great question. So those dollars that were not spent last year that get recouped this year go into the supplemental allocation. And that's distributed through different factors than just the Title I. But we take a nice portion of those dollars, about $9 million a year, and redistribute those back out to schools. So schools get two basic, I shouldn't say basic because one of them was called basic. They get two allocations of Title I. One is a baseline or a basic allocation, and then the supplemental. They also get parent involvement money, which is a certain percentage of their Title I. And then that needs to be spent on things to bolster parent involvement on their site for their Title I student. Tonight, we're going to be looking at the base allocation. So Mary, thank you for putting that up. If you could zoom in just a little bit on Horton Elementary, which I think is the top school there. There you go. That's perfect. So if you look down the columns where she just passed is a rank, and it is just basically that Horton is the top ranking as in terms of qualification for Title I in the elementary school bracket. The school is just the cost center number, and then it's elementary, middle, or high school. I think atypical might be in there. This report is organized with elementary at the top, middle schools at the bottom, high schools, and then atypical schools. So you see the level there is K-5 and then the school name. And if you look at the yellow section, this is through the collection that we just did through for LCFF form. And there's ways to direct certify students through the county if they're receiving certain services and they qualify. But for the most part, it's the collection of the LCFF data. It'll tell you the percentage of that school's population that qualifies for Title I. So we're going to take Horton, for example. Horton is the highest qualifying school. 97% of the student population at Horton qualifies for free and reduced lunch or qualifies to be in that poverty category. And it looks as though that there are 368 students that qualify, that are 97% of their total qualification. Now, the board policy that I spoke about, because it's the 15,500,000, what they've done is they've said we take the whole Title I population and figure out a per pupil account. How the accountants do this, I'd be lying to you if I told you I knew exactly how they figured this out, but I can walk you through it. They find out the highest number that the highest receiving school will get. And this year, that number is $547.05 per student. So when you take that per pupil amount and multiply that times the 368 students that qualify for Title I there, Horton in their base Title I allocation this year will receive $201,314. Now, where it starts to get confusing is there's something called a decrement. And a decrement is how much we take off of that per pupil amount for every percent below that top school. So if you look at Kimbrough qualified at 94%. It's fine. They put 94%, which is 3 percentage points below what Horton came in at. So it's $5.50. Cents per percentage point. So they would be at $16.50 less than what the per pupil amount at Horton is. The thinking behind that is schools that have the highest percentage of poverty have the highest needs. So our school district, our Board of Education, has decided historically, and I know that they feel very strongly about this, those schools that have the highest percentage of students that are qualifying for Title I should get a higher per pupil amount. And so if you scan down a little bit, let's just take one, for example, Choice Mead, since it's the last one that you can see on the list. They're at 88%, which is 9 percentage points below. So 9 times the 550, they're getting about $48 less per student. But when you take that and multiply it out, I'm sorry, if you scroll down a little bit, but they're getting $497.55 times the 446 students. They're still getting more money than Horton, because they're a bigger school. So it's a very finite formula. Again, I don't expect for you to be able to run out and recalculate all this because you understand it completely, but I wanted to give you the highlights of why that is. So Mary, if you can scroll down to the middle school section, maybe we'll run through one more. That's still elementary. You're fine. We have a lot of elementary. You know, that's good. Go back up just a little bit, though, to where you just were. If you are here tonight as a DAC member, but at a school that does not qualify for Title I, if you stop right there, Mary, you look at the right, these schools are those schools that are under the 40% mark. So then they do not qualify for the federal guidelines and you won't see any dollar amounts there. That's why we're not there. So that line is at the 40 and above, as I stated in the beginning. If you could scroll down to the middle school, back the other way. There you go. This is probably the middle school. No, still elementary. One more page. There we go. Okay, so again, just to walk you through it, Knox Middle School is our highest qualifying school. This year, they came out at 91%. Their per pupil amount, taking the $5.50 decrement off of the $5.58 down to the 91, would then be $514 per student. They have 488 students, so they're getting an allocation, base allocation, of about $256,000. Then moving down, Mann Middle is another high. Clark Middle, where I was principal for about 10 years, 9 years, I think, another high qualifying school. So what I'd like to do is perhaps, Crystal, if we have the time, let everybody kind of peruse this. I think it was put in the chat. If not, we could put it in there again. You can then open up, look at your school. And if you have any questions on your school or just on the process, I think we could probably have a couple minutes for questions.
Yes. I did put the link in the chat.
Thank you. I know it's a lot of information, but thanks for hanging in there with me.
And Tom, just to clarify, this data is based off the LCFF forms that were filled out this school year.
Just about a month ago, we stopped collecting, correct?
Great.
And it always affects the following year.
Mm-hmm. Good. Questions for Tom?
Again, this is the base allocation, and there will be a supplemental coming, which is pretty substantial also. As you're thinking about questions, the process now will be, I see that Meredith asked the timing on the supplemental. It probably will go to the board the same night as the second read, so it will probably be identified on January 25th. But the process will be that you will have SSC meetings at your site. Your principal will have all the allocations, including Title I, and then you will then take votes on how you'd like to spend those in preparations for the next SPSA, what goals you'll have, and so on and so forth. I thought I saw another question. Yep.
There's a couple questions. For schools that are below 40% but are still slated to get funds, basically, is that for continuity? And also, how and why would that change?
Good question. There's a grandfather clause. So if a school was over 40% this year, this current school year, if they're slated to go under 40% for next year, the board is allowed and always wants us to grandfather them for 1 year. So if by chance, and I don't know where those schools might be. Okay, so looks like Sarah High School. They were over 40% last year for this current school year. Looks like they dropped to 37. Therefore, they are going to be grandfathered in even at 37. If next year they don't make the 40, then they would be out of the Title I program. Great question, whoever asked that.
Yeah, that was Maureen.
Thank you.
Mark Braun, how will the combining of small schools, for example, at San Diego High School, impact calculation for next year? They have three current projections, yet have one school next year.
That's a very good question, too. So now each site, because they have their own cost center, gets the amount pertaining to how many students they have qualifying at each site. If you pull the sites together, then it will be the same because it'll just be on the same amount of students relatively, but in one school site. So whereas, I'm going to give you a super easy example. Three school sites, each of them have 20 qualifying. Those individual sites are getting the dollars based on 20 students, but you pull them together, the following year, that one school will get the amount for 60. Does that make sense, Mark, to your question?
Yes, thank you.
Sure, no problem.
Okay, I think Clifford, circling back to his question about who makes the decisions regarding supplemental monies and the factors, what are those factors, who decides, and what's the role of the DAC?
So I was afraid somebody was going to ask the factors because I failed to bring them up here in front of me, but I think I might be able to do them by memory. One is homeless foster youth. So there are a total of, I believe, six factors, one of which is if a child is just Title I. So let's take on the top of the screen is Garfield High School. They have 133 students qualified for Title I. So they will have a certain dollar amount under the supplemental, which normally ranges, don't quote me on this, anywhere from $80 to $105 per factor. So they would get, let's say it's $100 per factor, they would get $13,300 for those 133 students just solely because they're Title I. But we have other factors like low-achieving African-American. For every low-achieving African-American child they have, they'll get another $100 for that student. If they have homeless foster youth, another $100. So one child could be Title I, an English learner, low-achieving African-American, could be homeless. That's four factors for that one child, meaning $400 for that one child. So whereas it's not just on a percentage base like this base report, it's a more formulaic as far as what the students qualify for. And we've had some students at some schools that have qualified for all six. So if it's $100 per factor, they're getting that school's receiving $600 for that student alone, multiplied by everybody, other students that may have those same factors or some within. So I hope that answers the question on how we figure that out. It's a much more in-depth process. And again, the district's not really required to consult on the supplemental because, again, those dollars are created by these dollars the previous year that aren't spent. So any of these dollars you see here that aren't spent next year will get pulled into that supplemental and redistributed out through that program.
Tom, I just put in the chat that graphic that Erica presented at the October meeting. It talks just a little bit about the different types of funding, the base grant, the supplemental grant,
sure,
the concentration grant. So that's in the chat for folks who want to access it.
Thank you.
Other questions? And also, I have a burning question. You know, we didn't get as good of response with the LCFF cards this year because of the change to an online submission versus the traditional blue cards, which a lot of school sites were used to. So, I guess my question then would be, what are we going to do, if anything, changing that process? Are there any you know, ways to address that? And or can we go back to the blue card?
So we have discussed that as a district. I think we did a lot better than was projected that we were going to be, because we as a district prefer the online, not because it's more simple on our end, but it is more simple for the parents in all actuality. So through the Parent Connect, Parent Portal, if you've signed up for that, literally if you log in as yourself, there's an LCFF button, you click it and you push two buttons and you're done. Then it gets directly transferred into our system, so there's a lot less room for error. When you do the paper forms, people are transposing, people make mistakes, they have to be verified, have to be scanned and entered. It's just a lot longer process. So I believe that our preference would be online. So I think we're going to move towards that again next year. However, Crystal, you're absolutely right that I think back my exact comments at the last part of that meeting that we had regarding this was hindsight's 2020. We thought, hey, parents will do this online. It'll be real easy. But for one reason or another, it didn't pan out as deeply participated as we thought it would. So we're going to, our plan right now is to continue to do the way that we did, but have more supports for the paper, start that process perhaps earlier. I know that IT is on board and trying to help get more parents to use Parent Portal because, you know, if it was just for LCFF, it may not be worth the process, but there's so much in that program, in that application, and you can use it right from your cell phone, finding grades, finding school announcements, finding what's out for lunch. There's so many different things that parents can be using that for that I think IT is really interested in pushing, supporting school sites and getting more parents signed up.
Yeah. So it is helpful, but Tom, there are some issues and you know, I think we can maybe set some time aside at another DAC meeting to talk about these, but there are issues as a parent versus a student, you have access to different things. Right. And I know there was a comment in the chat about the access to PowerSchool. And so there's a lot of kinks I think to still be worked out in terms of using PowerSchool as a communication mode. And the translation, I mean, Don mentions translation for languages and PowerSchool. That's a whole other, you know, piece of the puzzle there. Sure. But Georgianne, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I have a question. It kind of pertains to our school, and I just wonder if it's been looked at. We have a large population of children in the early learning program, I believe about 100, a little bit less than that. These children do not necessarily stay at our school. In fact, out of my class, we're 24 students, only 5 are actually our school. And many of these kids, because it's early learning, are coming from more affluent areas. And I'm wondering how, if that is looked at in the numbers for this and how that affects our funding for school when a large percentage of our kids are actually leaving, the ones that actually are not in the lower income.
So I understand the dilemma and the question, but I guess I'll use the word unfortunately. The wherever the student is attending is where they give the credit to the school. So we would have a lot of times when I was principal at Clark, we had a lot of people who would attend schools in other areas, especially north of 8. And parents would come sometimes and they would say, you know, hey, my child still needs the support, but we're sending them, I don't want to name any schools, but they're at so-and-so school and they don't receive any Title I funds. And we say, well, because you're sending your child there and they don't really make it over the 40%. That site is not going to receive those dollars. So we would encourage them to stay in our community and let us get more dollars and work with them. But that was kind of an ever-going situation.
And we have the opposite, though, where the families that have, they're changing the percentage, but they're leaving and they, does that make sense? Because we are a feeder school for early childhood.
I'm not sure. Georgianne, can you tell me what school it is?
I'm at Linda Vista.
Okay, so you're saying preschool students are doing?
Yeah, we have preschool students. We have 48 preschool students and we have 48 UTK students. Where I'm the UTK teacher, only 5 of our students are actually staying. So that's about 100 students that are in our numbers that actually aren't going to be at our school next year. Or you know, maybe 20 will be at our school next year.
Well, if that were, not that you're not telling me the truth, but what I'm saying is if they were, I'm sorry, somebody's trying to get my attention. No, I know. I'm sorry, I got distracted. Somebody was trying to, but what I was about to say was, I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, we're not below 40 like the person asked. We're actually at 69, but I do know that in the past we've been higher, and I think it's the early learning that is making us so that our percentage is lower. Yeah,
so somebody was trying to get my attention, and I was going to share this also, but it's really on kindergarten and up. So your preschool students.
Well, UTK counts then as that because they're counted in our numbers. And that's
you're saying how many of them are moving out?
Well, in my class, there's only five that are out of 24 that are homeschool is Linda Vista.
Okay, maybe I'm not seeing it correctly, but I think, Georgianne, I think it would probably benefit your school what you're talking about right now, because we're counting the students when they're in the program. But you're saying they're not coming to your school next year, but you're still receiving those dollars because it's based on the previous year. So if I'm missing something, you and I can definitely talk offline and make sure I understand it.
No, yeah, I think it's just more the numbers percentage-wise, because that piece that puts us lower on the percentage, because like someone said, it kind of has diluted it.
Mm.
I was just wondering if that is just taken into account when most of those kids are not staying. And I think we're not the only school that happens to.
Okay. Yeah. I'd like to have some follow-up with you on that. So,
Okay. Well, I know we're nearing 8 o'clock and we had a breakout session, but I don't want to take up more time and go past our time boundary. I think we've had some really good questions. I don't want to leave us kind of hanging. So Tom, if you can put your email again in the chat. And I'm also going to put the DAC email in the chat because I really love some follow-up or some feedback about what we were going to talk about in the breakout sessions. I'll type that in the chat as well. Your feedback about what ideas does your SSC have to make the most of remaining funds for this year? And then what information would be helpful for your SSC to have to make the most of the remaining funds for this year? So send an email to the dac.sdusd@gmail.com. We will also put these questions in the take to your SSC document that we're putting the final touches on. So be on the lookout there. So there's a lot of information to take to your SSC. Some of you have already met for the month. Those of you who are meeting either tomorrow, probably tomorrow, and maybe not till January, please be sure to take that information back to your SSC. Great. Well, I think unless we have any further questions, did that go through the chat? Let me put that in the chat. Okay, there we go. Thought I pressed. Send. Okay. Any last comments or questions in the final minute that we have? Questions to bring back to your SSC. That is a document, Kim, that we are finalizing, and we'll send that out to all of the DAC reps and principals soon. Great. All right. Well, everybody have a great holiday. Hope you have some rest over the break. Enjoy time with loved ones and friends and family. I eat lots of cookies. It's okay. They don't count because it's a holiday, right? And we look forward to seeing you all here in January at our first meeting of 2022. Everybody have a great rest of the evening. Take care. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Karen, did you have a question that we could answer? Oh, looks like she's gone. Okay. Okay.
Is Tom there?
I think he'd left.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe you will know. Mm-hmm. Are the administrators to the presentation, are they down at the Ballard Parent Center?
Not all of them. Some of the presenters were off-site.
Oh, okay. I probably live closest to the Ballard Center than anybody else in the DAC. I can walk there.
Yeah, I think you mentioned last time that you went, but they were closed, but it might've been the wrong day.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was gonna apologize to him for being so difficult.
Oh, it's okay. No, it's good. Ask as many questions as you feel are important. We need to know this information because if you have the question, somebody else does.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Great. Happy thank holidays.
You. You too. You too. Take care.
Bye.
Crystal, I still do want to stay on a few minutes afterwards, but while with some of the other board members here, I think we should prioritize the breakout rooms in the next meeting agenda, because I know there were several representatives that were asking about that during the meeting. So if we can make that a priority, I think that would be great.
Okay. They were asking, were they sending you messages or were they in the chat?
A lot of them were in the chat, but I think even verbally during the public comment, someone mentioned their school didn't know what to do with leftover money.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I do think the breakouts are super important. I just don't, it's just hard, that balance of, so we got to talk about how to either shorten the presentations or have less presentations.
I obviously respecting time, but I think especially since the January meeting will be the last one before budgets are due in late February, I believe. So I think if we are going to have it, we need to have it sooner rather than later.
You know what we could do in the share with your SSCs? We could put some questions in there to have them start thinking about what they want to discuss at that January breakout to kind of get them thinking.
Do you want me to do that right now?
Yeah.
I can add those questions.
That'd be great. Thank you. Yeah, it's hard. I just counting for technical things. Let's see. Fred, did you have a question?
Yes. Michael, a question for you. And by the way, congratulations. As a first graduating class of UC High, I congratulate you. But anyways, Maureen wanted to know if you were going to be the voting DAC member or not. So you guys probably should talk about that at your next SSC meeting, whether you're going to be the DAC rep.
Sorry, can you repeat?
So Maureen Quisenberry, Ms. Quisenberry, she wanted to know if she was going to continue. She asked me, should she continue as the DAC rep now that you are on the board of the DAC? So she, that's something probably you guys should talk about in the SSC. That's what I told her to do. And then building on what Michael said, for the last 2 days, I've been working with Crawford and their SSC about the money that was left on the table. And they've been getting hit with some negative comments. So we've been kind of trying to get people to understand, but I think whatever best practices that come out of those feedback or the feedback that you get, Crystal, you know, as soon as you can get those out to SSCs, that would be fabulous. Cause I think Crawford's just one of many that are going through that. And they're looking for ways to not have that happen again. We can talk about all the excuses we want, but if we can somehow try to get people onto maybe some best practices, that would be a great idea. I thought your breakout session was perfect. It just was a tough agenda time.
I know. Yeah. So the best practices, that's something that we've been trying to get in, get out there, a centralized location where schools can share best practices with each other. That was something we started, Jeff, that was actually Jeff's idea last year. So we're working with the district on the technical aspects of that and the process, but I definitely agree it's something that's much needed. So the breakouts, so I think if Michael, you can add that DAC email address, and folks can start sending things and then I'll forward them on. We just have to think about a communication process and how that goes out, who it goes out to. I don't want to inundate people with a bunch of emails, be helpful to collect them all at once.
I'll do that in a second. Another thing that I think though that we should discuss is a lot of in the chat, a lot of people mentioned that PowerSchool was not easy to access. I was shocked by that since I joined the district. It has been such a huge easy thing to do, and I think that's very important. So I think that needs to be a priority.
Yeah, Pamela, I see your hand up. I wrote your name down by that.
That's what we do. So two things. The first one has to do with the allocations of funds and coming up with like design thinking of how schools can utilize it, because I got a call as soon as the article went out. And the first thing I thought was, how can we brainstorm? How can we work together with the DAC and with the families and schools? Just to give them ideas. So whatever you guys decide, I want to be a part of it, please. Because I want to be able to give that document to the principals as well. Now we have a PowerSchool PowerPoint that we do. Michael, it's actually on our website. We have it in three different languages, but we have the person who can do it virtually. Just take parents through the steps. So if you guys vote on it and you want her to come, Isel, we can have her here, or then if it's a higher need, we can schedule another one on our platform.
I mean, I think
we have it on our website. No, that's fine.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. I think since our priority is to make sure students are getting an understanding, making sure parents can be an active part of that is super important. And I think PowerSchool would be a great way to do that. Ms. King, as long as you are here, I was wondering, are schools offering lunches over the break, over winter break? Because I know last year they did. So I was wondering.
So they didn't do it in November because they've been working around the clock. And when I check the website, I don't see anything in December, but I see Feeding America, Feeding San Diego.
Got it.
So that's why I put those in there, because they're trying to give their staff a little break. And so they didn't have anything for break time, but they do have Feeding San Diego.
Oh, Pam, thanks so much for making yourself available. I know that it's 8:07 now, and we still have to render this. We can't leave the campus because we need internet access. So I want to graciously ask everyone if we can hold the rest of our questions to the executive meeting so that we can start rendering the audio recording for this now. Okay. We're all good? All right. Thank you. Sorry. And have a wonderful winter break.
You too. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great break, everybody.
You too. Thanks. Bye.